Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Web Sleuth Radio, my friends, and happy Thanksgiving weekend to you. Now, later in the show, we're going to discuss something that happened in Indianapolis. Actually, it's a whole bunch of somethings. It's homicide. Homicides are going unsolved. Why? Well, we're going to find out with former Indianapolis homicide detective and host of the Mannina Files, Christine Mannina. She'll join us a little bit later in the show. But first off, okay, let's talk about Thanksgiving for a moment. Most of us spend it with our family, overeating turkey, dealing with relatives who annoy the hell out of us, and then we all end the day fat and happy. Most of us. Think about a teenager. A teenager whose mother drank while she was pregnant with her. The mother did drugs while she was a little teeny baby. Her whole childhood is growing up in a horribly abusive home. She runs away, and who could blame her, and is forced into prostitution by her new fun-loving pimp named Cutthroat. Yes, that's what they call him, Cutthroat. It's a name I think you're going to hear a lot, and a name of a young woman that you're going to know all about her story in the coming weeks, Centoya Brown. Centoya was this pimp's property, basically, and she was with a John, and according to Centoya, she thought that John was reaching for a gun, and she shot him. She had a pistol with her, and she was 16 at the time. Now, get this, 16, this was 13 years ago, 16, and in prostitution, forced into prostitution, they tried her as an adult, and the prosecutor put on the case that this wasn't a life or death situation. She didn't feel she was in a life or death situation. She just wanted to rob the guy, and the jury believed them, and since then, for 13 years, Centoya has been in prison, and her first parole hearing, she will be, I've read two things, either 67 or 69 years old. Now, recently, the Supreme Court has said, no, life without parole for minors is just inhumane. Can't do it. I have no idea if it's retroactive, but I'm sure we'll find out. And why will we hear about Centoya Brown in the coming days? Because of Rihanna and because of Kim Kardashian and all the other celebrities that are now getting behind her to get out of prison. Joining us today is the man that we all know and love. He knows everything about true crime, and he hosts Crime and Scandal, his podcast, which is always just top-rate amazing. Levi Page, welcome back. We love having you on our show.
Thanks, Trish. I love Web Sleuth.
Well, thank you. Let's talk about Centoya Brown. Basically, I just gave you the very, very bare bones details. Now, I want to just point out something. I agree that she should never have been tried as an adult. She shouldn't have been tried at all. She should have been taken off the street and put in a psychiatric facility. Because if she has fetal alcohol syndrome, like it has been suggested she does, then her frontal lobes are a mess. You can't punish someone who doesn't have the frontal lobes with the ability to know right from wrong. Okay, let's put that aside for a moment. All these celebrities are getting around her, which I think is wonderful, Levi. But I want everybody to remember a name, Jack Abbott. Jack Henry Abbott. He was author of Belly of the Beast, and he was this big celebrity in prison because he wrote this wonderful book in 1981, and all these celebrities came out saying, oh, come on, this guy is, he was in prison for, I believe, manslaughter, and it's so hard to explain. All of a sudden, kind of like this, he wrote this book, and all of these celebrities came out to support him, to say, come on, let's get him out on parole. He actually stabbed a guy in prison while he was serving a forgery sentence. But yeah, he was not a good guy to do that, or he was just defending himself. Let him out. Look at this great book he's written. It's a bestseller, blah, blah, blah. He gets let out. And guess what? 6 weeks later, he ends up stabbing a man to death. Now, that to me, Levi, is a very good lesson, meaning if somebody deserves to be let out, that doesn't mean you throw them out to society. And if we take Santoya Brown, who should never have been in prison, and just plop her out on the streets, yeah, the celebrities will surround her for about 5 minutes, and then she's going to be on her own. And then she will not have any idea how to cope with her life. So, Levi, I'm really anxious to hear what you think about this case.
Well, I agree with that assessment. I think that she does need help to get back into the real world if she is released from prison. But I think the big element of this case that is so infuriating is that this was a minor, and a minor cannot consent to sex under the law. She should not have been in this situation in the first place, and how she got into prostitution trafficking is because her mother was a horrible mother who was a drug addict, an alcoholic, who drank when she was pregnant, and she ran away from home. I mean, who would not want to run away from home with that lifestyle as a child? So you really can't cast aspersions on this young lady who was just a teenager when all of this happened, and then she hooks up with these scumbags, a pimp by the name of Cutthroat, and I think that says it all right there.
Exactly.
And she alleges that he raped her, that he beat her, that he would send her out to have sex with other men, and he would collect the money. And she was sent out one night and hooked up with this 43-year-old man, a 43-year-old with a teenager, 15, 16 years old. She should have been a sophomore in high school. Just think about that if you have kids or nieces, nephews, cousins, grandchildren. A sophomore in high school is
right
out there having sex with a 43-year-old man. And she hooks up with this Johnny Allen. He's 43 years old, and she is taken to his place, and he shows her his collection of guns. He has guns everywhere, and they're having sex, and she says that she sees him reach under his bed for something. She thought it was a gun, so she reaches into her purse, grabs her gun, and shoots him. And I guess the reason that she was prosecuted comes down to her actions after the shooting. She didn't shoot him and run away. She shot him, and she stole money from him and two of his firearms. So,
well, to me, yeah,
that's what,
to
that's
me, that's
why
that doesn't
she was
say
charged.
Anything.
However, her pimp, Cutthroat, wanted her to bring back money, and I'm sure if she did not bring back him money or things that were of value, like firearms, she can make a lot of money off of that, that he would probably beat the shit out of her. So,
absolutely.
It's a lose-lose situation from her with this Santoya Brown, and my heart goes out to her. I mean, she should have never been in this situation to begin with. And what's very disturbing to me is the quotes from the prosecutor in this case. He was interviewed by Fox 17, a local Nashville news station, and he's Johnny Allen is a victim, a crime victim, and this young woman, this teenager at the time in 2004, as the perpetrator, and he is no longer a prosecutor in Tennessee. He's now a prosecutor currently in the state of Georgia, and all of these men were committing crimes having sex with her.
Right.
So they are the perpetrators.
That's how I feel, and I don't understand how someone looking at this case couldn't come away with that. We have come so far, Levi, in understanding the crime of prostitution and sex trafficking. We should be on another level now of understanding what happens to young women and young boys too when they are sucked up into the sex trafficking whole picture. And you can't hold them accountable for what they do based on the fact that somebody was doing something illegal to them. Doesn't mean they shouldn't be punished. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't take them off the street. You don't give them an award and send them on their way. but you don't punish them more in a horrible manner. I'm sure Santoya just probably went, well, okay, I'm going to prison pretty much for my life. She didn't have much of a life anyway. I have to wonder if prison wasn't a bit of a relief where she didn't have to worry about her, you know, cutthroat pimp, that name. I just want to smack him till he's dead. But anyway, she's had the most horrible life. Just reading about it, I cringe. I can't imagine. I mean, I remember one time I didn't have enough money to buy my son shoes he really wanted, and I felt like the most terrible parent in the world. Those are the things that we think about raising kids. But what she has gone through. Hey, Levi, we were trying to find out what brought this on. Why did Rihanna, why did Kim Kardashian start this Twitter awareness of this case? Have you heard anything? What prompted this?
It was a report that was aired on a local Nashville, Tennessee news station. Fox 17 News in Nashville aired a report on Santoya Brown, and that spurred a lot of hashtags on Twitter. And you can go to hashtag Free Santoya Brown. And then celebrities started picking it up. LeBron James, Kim Kardashian, Rihanna, Snoop Dogg, and others started picking this up. And then that's when it took a life of its own. And people started taking a deeper look into this case. And, you know, that's a good thing. And I think a lot of times celebrities can jump on some bandwagons that they don't need to jump on. You know, for instance, remember in 2005 there was a killer that killed four people. He was in San Quentin prison. His name was Tukey Williams. He was a gang member,
oh,
I think part of the
yes.
Crips gang. And tons of celebrities were rallying around him. They did not want him to be executed. But he killed four people. He was a gang member, and he killed them for drugs, not for defense or because he was a victim of a crime like Santoya Brown. So celebrities jump on bandwagons.
Exactly, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm thinking here about him. I remember that case very well. Didn't he go into a Korean-owned store and kill those? I mean, I think there's a tape
yes.
of it somewhere.
That's
oh,
him.
And it was just horrendous. And the reason the celebrities got behind him is, number one, he wrote a children's book. And
yeah.
number two, he was supposedly was trying to get the gangs to talk to each other. He was being the go-between, and they said, he's rehabilitated. I'm sorry, you watched that damn tape, and you tell me you want that man out. He was executed,
yeah.
as he should have
he
been.
He was. And
Absolutely.
And Snoop Dogg also jumped on that bandwagon to try to get him his sentence commuted. He even wanted him released. I can understand maybe they didn't want him to get the death penalty. They're against the
sure.
death penalty. That's their thing. But to have him released, I mean, that was going way too far because he killed four people, probably more because he was a gang member. And he
mm-hmm.
might have turned his life around while he was in prison, but that his victims were not able to do that. So when celebrities jump on a bandwagon, I give it a little side eye, and I look and, hey, should I agree with them? And on this case, I think they do have a good point. I mean, this was a teenager, a girl that should have been a sophomore in high school, and instead she was being taken advantage of by adults, and she was a victim of sex trafficking because she can't consent under the law. And I think that this is a good cause that people need to look into. I know that the governor of Tennessee, Bill Haslam, that people are petitioning the governor to commute the sentence. I don't know. He's a Republican. He's pretty conservative. I don't know if he would or not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that people are looking into. And
I
think it's
so.
Great that more eyes are being looked are into this case. And she has done some things in prison that shows that she has turned her life around. She got a GED. She got an associate's degree from Lipscomb University, and that's a private Christian college in Nashville that offers courses at women's prisons. It's a very
mm-hmm.
good school in Nashville, but they offer courses for women in prison, and she completed an associate's degree. So she has done some good, and hopefully something will happen here where she is given maybe put into a psychiatric evaluation, is evaluated, gets treatment, and then maybe she is slowly integrated into society
yes.
instead of just thrown out there.
Let's take years to make sure that she gets the help she needs and that she can truly handle the outside. Let's not have another Jack Henry Abbott type situation. Levi, I need to get on my soapbox just a little bit here, because one of my soapbox issues is fetal alcohol syndrome. And let me tell you about something that I bet nobody out listening really knows. There's something called fetal alcohol effects, okay? So if you're drinking and while you're pregnant and your baby comes out, and if you have fetal alcohol syndrome, there are physical signs. They have really thin lips. Their eyes are very almond-shaped. They kind of have a flat bridge between the eyes on the nose. Very distinctive looks. You can look at a child and say, oh, my God, he was born with fetal alcohol syndrome. Okay, then you know. The problem is there is also something called fetal alcohol effects, where if you drink, it will more than likely affect the brain of your baby. And they'll come out, they'll look as cute as can be, but they'll have the same problem as somebody with fetal alcohol syndrome. It just for some reason did not affect their looks at that particular time. So you've got somebody out there who you say, well, maybe even Centoya doesn't look like she has fetal alcohol. I'm telling you, if her mother drank, I would bet my life she has fetal alcohol effects, which is the same thing without the looks. Okay, off my soapbox.
Well, wasn't
now.
She diagnosed? I read that she was diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome in 2012.
Yes, she was diagnosed with it. Exactly. But there, you know, you look at her. I looked at her, and I couldn't tell just by her face that she was fetal alcohol syndrome. But yes, she was diagnosed.
Do they grow out of it, Tricia, or do they keep those traits?
No, they keep those looks. It's the whole life. Some are more severe than others, but they do keep those whole looks. But there was one case that I was reading about, and it was a young woman, and they really worked with her. She had fetal alcohol syndrome. She was adopted. And they really worked with her. And she was aware of the fetal alcohol syndrome. And she was aware that she reacted differently than everybody else. And they made her aware and basically trained her to act another way, even though it went against everything she felt was right. So there is some hope here with fetal alcohol syndrome. There really is. They're doing amazing things with helping children born with this syndrome. Fetal alcohol effects, again, if you think just by looking at Centoya and you think, no, she doesn't have the look, sorry, she could very easily be incredibly affected by the drinking, because what it does, it, like I said earlier, it affects the frontal lobes. And it's like screaming at a blind man, you better see. Well, if you don't have the equipment, if you don't have the corneas to do it, you won't see. Same thing with fetal alcohol syndrome. You got to behave. There's nothing in there that stops her from doing what she wants. She doesn't have the right brain tissue that fires properly, basically. So this young woman has a long way to go, but let me tell you, she was a rotten hand in life, and it's time that we as a humane society step up and take this young woman in our arms and say, we're going to help you. We're going to make sure that you're going to be okay when you get out. And you know what? She may never be okay to get out into society. Don't you think that's a possibility? If so, then you keep her in a hospital. You don't keep her in a prison, right?
I concur. I think those are excellent points. And one other thing that I wanted to mention, Tricia, and, you know, I'm not one to play the race card. I think people play that way too much in cases
right.
where it's not applicable. However, I think that there is a case to be made here. I mean, look at Centoya Brown, who was sentenced to life in prison for killing child traffickers, people that were
mm-hmm.
having sex with a minor, and she got life in prison. And then look at Brock Turner, who was a student at Stanford, who was educated,
mm-hmm.
who had parents who were upper middle class or rich, and he raped a young woman using a foreign object to penetrate her, and
mm-hmm.
did this while she was unconscious behind a dumpster, and he was only sentenced to 6 months behind bars. And
yeah, there's all kinds of inequities. I mean, there are horror
people are,
stories,
are
like you said.
People are looking at these situations and are saying, you know, why is she given such a hard sentence, such a harsh sentence, but then someone like Brock Turner, who, and I don't know if it's necessarily a race thing, I think it may have more to do with
money.
Or prestige, and that's a good point. I think that's a compelling argument and something that we need to examine within our criminal justice system. Are people being treated fairly? Should someone that is poor, that comes from a bad family life, be treated more harsh than someone who is educated, who has parents that have money, and they are, you know, an all-star athlete? That's something we need to examine. It's a two-tier justice system.
It is. And another thing, Levi, and I want people to think about this. When you vote for your prosecutor, for your DA, think about this. You need somebody that understands these issues. You're not being soft on crime. You're not being a bleeding heart liberal doing stupid things. And I can say that because I'm a bleeding heart liberal. You need somebody in these positions to understand the dynamic and to do the right thing. To me, a district attorney is somebody that's supposed to do the right thing in a situation. I remember, now his name, and I can see him. Alan, he's the, he worked on the O.J. Simpson case. He's really famous.
Alan Dershowitz.
Thank you. He said that when people come up to him and say, I want to be a defense attorney just like you, I want to right some wrongs. And he tells them, if you want to right some wrongs, you become a prosecutor, because we need prosecutors that could go in, look at Santoya, and not look at her with this hard edge, you know, and I know people are going to freak when I say this, but this, you know, incredibly conservative white male who looks at this as just the guy was shot, she did it. Sorry, no, you've got to take it into consideration that this was somebody that was raping a child, and that was not taken into consideration at all. It was only because she stole the money and stole the guns that she was tried at all, and to me, that means nothing. To me, that's just, she knows she had to bring money, like you said, home to her pimp. It's there. She takes it. That's what she's been trained to do her whole life, basically, is steal to survive, at least her life on the street. And that, to me, means absolutely nothing in this case. So when you're voting for your DA, I would make damn sure that they don't believe everything is black and white, that they know really most of the time the situation is gray. And you need to make it right for the victim, but also you got to look at the perpetrator sometimes. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes you need to look and go, okay, this person, like Santoya, was dealt a rotten hand in life. They've never had a chance. How can we expect her to behave any other way than how she's behaving? And because we are supposedly a kind society, we do have programs and we do have money set aside to help people like Santoya. So, Levi, let's just keep our fingers crossed and hope that that justice prevails here at least, and she is at the very least taken out of prison and put into a hospital situation where she can be well taken care of and maybe someday released to society, maybe not. You have to wait and see. Okay, Levi, I know you have to go, but I want you to talk about your podcast. What's coming up?
Hi, Tricia. So thanks for bringing that up. Go to Crime and Scandal. You can type that into your search engine. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcasts app. Just type in Crime and Scandal and subscribe. And if you like the podcast, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And I have episodes up there on the Natalie Holloway case, the Mara Murray disappearance, Haley Cummings. I have a 7-part series on her case. And I did a show with you on Stacey Peterson. And I interviewed Pat Brown, a criminal profiler, and we discussed Sherry Papini in depth. That is the woman that vanished in California. And many people think that it could have been a hoax, and we examine that case. And Pat Brown mentions Munchausen by proxy. Could she have... Mm-hmm. That syndrome, not by proxy, just Munchausen syndrome.
Munchausen, she wants attention.
Yes, they fake injuries, or not even, they inflict injuries on themselves for attention, and she has a history of that, and she even falsely accused her mother of harming her in the past. So is that relevant to this abduction?
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. The number you dialed has been changed, disconnected, or is no longer in service. If you feel you have reached this recording in error, please check the number and try your call again. Announcement 2, switch 80-2.
Okay, there we go.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. The number you dialed has been changed, disconnected, or is no longer in service.
Yikes.
If you feel you have reached this recording in error,
I don't know why that's coming over the air. There we go. Okay. Here we go. Hold on. That's coming over the air.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. The number you dialed has been changed, disconnected, or is no longer in service. If you feel you have reached this recording in error, please check the number and try your call again. Announcement 2. Switch 80-2.
Okay, there we go. Sorry, Levi. Boy, wasn't that fun. I don't know why that was going over the air. You know, it wouldn't be Web Sleuth Radio without a huge, big, huge cluster of mistakes. And it's my fault, of course. I was dropped on my head a lot. Maybe that, you know what, I should come out against that. Don't let your big brother drop you on your head all the time. Stop him from doing it. Okay, Levi, hey, thank you so much. Good luck with not good luck, just have a fun Sunday, and good luck. Hope nothing bad happens to you. How's that?
Well, Tricia, thanks for having me on. I'll come on anytime. I'm a big fan of Web Sleuth and all the work you guys do.
Oh, we love you too, my dear. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's see. We're going to get let's see here. Hold on one second. My apologies. I need to send this number to somebody. Okay. I'm going to tell my producer here I am sending you this number. There you go. You've got it. And you can go ahead and call it. Okay. That's the number. Okay. So we're waiting for Christine to come on and talk about this event. That's not an event. This situation in Indianapolis. I don't know a whole lot about it, but apparently there
The number you have dialed has not been recognized. Please try again.
Okay, why is that coming over the air? I don't know why that's coming over the air. Hold on one second here, everybody. When you listen to the recorded version of the show, all of this will be out, and I will sound like the true professional that I absolutely pretend to be. So there we go. Okay, I'm asking her to call in, so we should be good to go on that. Anyway, Christine Mannina is an amazing woman. She's a former homicide detective. She's got awards galore, and she was a homicide detective in Indianapolis. Well, she says that there are these homicides that are happening, and no one's really paying attention, and nobody's really talking about it, but she wants to talk about it, and we are going to let her talk about it. So she should be calling in any time here momentarily. And until then, let's talk a little bit about the what is the case that we have here. Oh, yeah, the killings going on in Tampa Bay. I was just looking at the Web Sleuth thread on that. You've got to visit it, people. It's very easy to find. All you need to go is websleuth.com. And then just scroll down and to the, to the crimes in the news. So go to websleuth.com, scroll down to crimes in the news, and then click on the Tampa Bay killings. Look at the work our members have done there. It is really amazing work. And especially on the last page, I was just looking at that as I was going in to get some more information. I got just stuck on those pages because it was fascinating work they were doing. in the Tampa Bay killings, they do have a video. It's kind of a grainy video of a guy in a hoodie. And our members have taken that and extrapolated things and made it so you can see it. So it's much easier to see and to understand. But nothing else. That's it. That, I mean, can you imagine the fear? This guy would just walk up to people and kill them. He's done it four times. It's the same guy. He walks up, runs away, doesn't stay, doesn't grab anything, doesn't do anything to the victims other than shoot them in the head. So that is just frightening to me. I can't imagine living in a place where you have somebody like that. What do you do? I mean, you can't, if somebody can come up behind you at any time, do you have to turn around in circles and keep walking? It's ridiculous. Okay, hold on one second. Would you mind calling her and just not on air? If you can. If you can't, don't worry about it. Okay, then don't worry about it. We're just waiting for her to call in, for Christine Menina to call in. It is, the number she calls is 713. Yeah. So we're just waiting for her to call in because we don't know what happened with our equipment here at Blog Talk Radio. Like I said, it's always a fun time because you never know what is going to mess up while you're sitting here live to try and, you know, do a show. Hold on one second. Did you just leave a message? Oh, okay. I don't know where she is. La da da. Come on, Christine Menina. Okay. Well, anyway, she should be here shortly, and hopefully she'll be able to explain this homicide thing going on. Okay, on situations like this, we call it tap dancing. I'm going to tap dance. I'm going to talk about things that I know are interesting to you that I wasn't planning on talking about. But trust me, you'll love it. Web Sleuth. WebSleuth.com. Did you know that was started in 1997 for the JonBenet case? And for the members of Web Sleuth, did you know you could go on to Web Sleuth for years and call people names and accuse innocent people and put up people's addresses and pictures? All of that was allowed. And then I purchased it in 2004, and it was still a cluster. It was a cluster for several years after I purchased it. I even had one of my admins who was helping me. There she is. Okay. Hi, Christine. I am so sorry. We were having all kinds of technical difficulties, and I was just starting to tell the audience the story of my life, which I'm sure would have bored them to death. So you saved them. You saved them, my dear. Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it, and sorry for the trouble. We're talking with Christine Menina. And Christine, you were a homicide detective for many years in Indianapolis, and you know the deal. You know how the police departments work. You've investigated over 700 cases, including the homicides. And now you're the director of the police departments in Indianapolis Explorers Program for middle and high school students. You're truly an amazing woman and somebody I admire greatly. I want you to tell me what's going on in Indianapolis. This is just very fascinating.
Well, yes, thank you so much again for having me on the show. And we are having, you know, we're just having, again, another record year of homicides. And mm-hmm. I think that we are really struggling with solving a lot of them. So we're trying to grapple with the problem of, people coming to cooperate with the detectives, witnesses, and people, you know, that are involved in it. We're really struggling with that. And in turn, you know, we're not getting the arrests that we need and eventually, you know, being able to solve the cases.
So what is different about this, though? People are not coming in. Is it because it's gang related? They're in fear for their life? Is it somehow mob related? What's the common denominator? Why are they not coming in to help?
See, because this past year we've had a lot of young people killed. We've had a lot of juveniles killed. And I think, you know, we had a homicide a few weeks ago at near a mall, and there were probably, mm-hmm. you know, 50 kids that witnessed this. And by the time, you know, the detectives and were able to get around to them, their parents were telling them, you know, they're not bringing in their child. to get involved in this because of a lot of different reasons. They hadn't had good experiences with the police, or they're worried about retaliation. And as you know, when you're dealing with young people and juveniles, it's a lot more difficult because you've got to go through the parents. And they were literally telling their kids that even though they may have seen it, you know, they didn't do it, and they're not going to let them get involved and tell the detectives what happened.
Now, that is interesting because as a parent, I'm nodding my head and saying, I get it. If I didn't feel it was safe for my child to go in and help with a case, I wouldn't do it. My first concern is my child. And I would never allow him to talk to anybody if it was going to endanger his life. As a former police officer, you've seen this and you're seeing it again now in Indianapolis. How do you fix that problem? How do you convince parents like me and everybody else to bring their child in because you need to have you need to get this case solved?
Well, it's interesting. And the way that I investigated my homicides, and I ran into it a lot, but I think you just have to continue to communicate and get a rapport with, anybody in the victim's family. And I found that out so many times that initially, you know, when you go and you tell families, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, you know, that their loved one had been killed, obviously that's a horrible, horrible situation. But if you keep going back and you develop some type of relationship with anybody in the family, and what I found is I was able to reach a lot of grandmothers, and really they were the head of the household.
Oh, now that's interesting. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and get a relationship with her and try to give them the broader picture of, you know, initially, of course, it's dangerous, you know, to get involved, but that it will be more dangerous if the person that took their loved one's life, you know, gets away with it and then can continue to do it and break up another family. And so I think it just really comes down to relationships, which, of course, is, you know, we're having a struggle with that as police departments across the country, you know, with certain officers that are doing things that they shouldn't do. It puts a black mark on all of us. And I think it just comes down to trying to develop better relationships with people as police officers, and that we have to step up. We have to do a better job, even though the majority of police officers are good, at least in my experience. But when one does something, it affects us all. And unfortunately, we may not be the ones that are bad, but we've got to do a better job of stepping up and getting those relationships. And it takes a while. I mean, you have to, you're never going to solve a homicide at your desk. You've got to get out in the neighborhood. You've got to establish relationships. And then eventually, at least in my instances, people will come forward and try and help you because they know that you care. And they know that at the end of the day, you're just trying to bring some type of justice, closure, whatever you want to call it, to these families. And I can't do it alone.
And that's certainly understandable. And especially when you talk about the police officers, maybe one has done something wrong. Here's the deal. That one that's done something wrong, they could have a YouTube video, and it could have 12 million views on it. So the days of a police officer doing something wrong and really rarely anybody finding out about it, it's getting almost over. I'm sure it still happens. But now, if a police officer does something wrong, boom, it's on YouTube before you can blink your eye. And I'm sure that has a big effect on people not cooperating with the police, don't you think?
Oh, I think so, absolutely. When you're integrated with media streams 24/7 a day and it's being repeated and people are commenting and, you know, it's on Facebook and all sorts of media and social media platforms, I mean, it makes it really, really tough. And I think, you know, if you could find that one person in that family that can jump on board with what you're trying to do and just continue to work, and it takes a while. I mean, the cases, you're not going to get them solved quickly. But eventually, when emotions calm down and you continue to keep going back to these families going, look, you know, this is the situation. They're going to get away with it. They're going to get away with it. You know, it's just it's a process. It's not going to be quick. It takes a long time to get the trust of the general public when the police have violated it.
So we're looking at cases in Indianapolis proper that are they not getting the attention as far as media goes? there just seems to be something going on here, maybe something almost unspoken. Why is this really a problem other than the number? You don't want the number to go up. But it does. There's not a whole lot out there about these crimes, is there?
No, not really. I mean, the media is a tricky establishment, but they don't cover a lot of the homicides that occur. Now, we're having a lot, you know, we're having them every day, and they pick and choose, I think. And it would be interesting to really ask, you know, our local stations, why are you covering this one and not that one? Because we just had a homicide the other day of a prominent doctor that has been in the city and done a million great things. And, of course, they're covering it. And his wife was very established in the community as a dean for one of our local universities. But, you know, and that got a lot of coverage. But there were probably three or four homicides, you know, the day before, the day of, that never even saw any coverage. And I don't know if it's just because it's happening all the time or what, but they're definitely not getting the media coverage. But then, you know, they did a short quip on, you know, getting away with murder in Indianapolis. And they talked about, you know, all these people that are really killing people and then still walking the streets. So, I mean, that's an interesting concept. I can't really answer why the media, you know, initially it looks like, well, it's just another, you know, bad person killing another bad person, you know, in the low-income areas
right.
of the city. I mean, that's looks like initially. But that's a good question, and I think if it could get a little bit more media attention. Now the homicide up near the mall, that was kind of a big deal because that mall, you know, typically doesn't have big crimes like that. So,
right.
But a lot of these homicides are occurring in the same type of area. It's an everyday type of thing, and they just don't give it the media coverage it deserves.
So, tell me about the Grundy Gang. That name is popping up here. Speaking of bad guys killing bad guys.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because I, you know, the Grundys have been around Indianapolis forever, and it's a family of thugs, to put it, you know, lack of better word, and they control a lot of the drug trade, and they control a lot of the streets, and they're very, very intimidating. And, you know, federal, you know, agents and our local people will go in and do search warrants and catch him on things. But then when the trial comes, you know, the witnesses are no, you know, in the wind and not cooperating. So I think he's, you know, he's got that type of pull where he's able to influence witnesses not to show up either through violence or, you know, possibly even paying them off. And we're really, really struggling with trying to nail them down. So that's, you know, they've just been around forever. I mean, everybody knows the Grundys. It's just that type of
gang. Isn't
that gang
frustrating,
and
though?
So
it, you know what they're doing. They get off. Wasn't somebody tried and then they walked away? And I can't imagine. It sounds like something out of Goodfellas, to be honest. And I thought those days were over, you know, where they couldn't get away with shooting the other bad guys. And again, yeah, you're right. Some people will say, well, it's just bad people on the bad side of town killing each other. Well, it does matter because we just don't allow murder in our society. So get over it, people. We've got to do something because, first of all, who knows who will get killed with that person? It very well could be an innocent bystander and probably has already happened. So let's say somebody's listening to this, Christine. And they may know something, but they're afraid of the Grundy Gang, very rightfully so. What do you say to them to say, come in? Can you offer them protection? What would you do as a former police officer, a detective, excuse me?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, we've got the Crime Stoppers, you know, 317-232-TIPS, and you can remain anonymous. I think with the Grundy Gang, if they've got information on the Grundy Gang, absolutely. I think at this point in time, you know, and we're like every other city, there's not a lot of funds available. It's not like TV where, you know, you're going to get the witness protection program going. We just don't have the funds for that. But I think if people were, you know, willing to give, you know, good, definite information on the Grundy, that they would find money somehow to be able to protect these people because, we, you know, we're fed up. And it's just, it's a menace to society. And, it's just, it's an interesting aspect, because what I'm learning too, and I learned this too when I was in homicide, that a lot of these young people that are committing these crimes so quickly, you know, they haven't learned how to deal with, you know, conflict in any other way mm-hmm. than to grab a gun and shoot somebody. But, you know, they don't expect to live very long. And they
right.
really, truly believe that. They just do not expect to live past, you know, 25. So it's okay for them to live a risky kind of lifestyle and deal with conflict however they see fit. And that's another interesting thing. And it's the same with the Grundys. I mean, the mm-hmm. people that are running with that crew, they don't anticipate, you know, living very long. So they just kind of control, you know, they want to control the neighborhoods. They want to control the drug trades in the short time that they will be here and willing to take a lot of risk. And they have a lot of influence over these young people that look at the lifestyle as, you know, very cool and very fast and quick and quick money and the glamorous part of it. And we're really struggling with that with our youth.
I want to maybe point out, have you ever seen a senior citizen that was the leader of the gang or a big drug trafficker? No, you don't, because you're right. They all die young, and they do expect to die young, which is, to me, unfathomable, because why would you do something that you know is going to kill you? I guess they just don't, they haven't processed it in their brains properly. Like you said, that's how they solve the conflict. They grab a gun and shoot somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so from your experience and what's going on now with the Grundys, how do you deal with the youth that you just spoke about that looks at these gangs and says, that is cool. I have nothing. I live on nothing. All I can get is a job flipping burgers. Why shouldn't I go do this and make thousands and thousands of dollars, at least for a little bit? What do you say?
Right. It's interesting, because I remember when I was a rookie on the streets and I was working the late shifts, and it always kind of intrigued me that, you know, and I worked a really, really rough area of the city as a rookie, and it always intrigued me when I was driving around patrolling as people were just kind of wandering, you know, wandering around
mm-hmm.
and hanging out, and nobody had, you know, no one was setting their alarm to get up to go work. Like, there was no thought of what's going to happen in 10 minutes. And I just
mm-hmm.
thought that was always so, so intriguing. But I think with our youth, you know, they're being brought up by young people as well. A lot of people are having kids and they're young themselves, and they're just brought up in this type of environment, and they really just don't know better. And when you come from nothing, and I remember, you know, I got it why the kid would steal the Air Jordans from somebody at gunpoint, because he's never had anything before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was easy and quick, and it was very, you know, we're in a society now where everything is immediate gratification. You can get everything really, really quick. There's no thinking of, let me just work for them. Let me work a few months to buy them. It's just go steal them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, it's a sad part of society that everything is so quick. Everything is just in your face. And when you don't know better, it's really hard to do better. So we're getting the population now that were raised by babies themselves. I mean, 16, 17, 18-year-old, you know, single mothers that are living in the middle of poverty and violence, and they just don't know any better. And when you don't know, it's really, really difficult. But with the
mm-hmm.
youth that I'm working with, it's just trying to give them different opportunities to see that there's something outside of your immediate neighborhood. And really, it just comes down to trying to find them, get them involved in some type of program, and then just show them anything different than what they're used to. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do with these kids now.
Well, let's talk about that. You now are head of an incredible organization with the Indianapolis Police Department. Tell us what you're doing. That I admire.
Well,
incredible.
Yeah, so I'm in charge of two programs now. I'm in charge of a new program since we talked last, but I'm still in charge of the Police Explorer program, which is a youth program for kids, you know, male and female, between the ages of 12 and 18 that may be interested in a career in law enforcement. And I really
mm-hmm.
use that, you know, loosely, because I don't care if you're interested in law enforcement or not. If you want to be a part of this program,
mm-hmm.
you know, you absolutely can be. But the main focus is trying to teach them what it would be like and what is needed to become a law enforcement, and then just trying to throw in a lot of life skills and how to deal with conflict and, you know, when you're at the mall and somebody pushes you, all those things. And then I'm in charge of another program called, it's our cadet program, and that's a program for young people 18 to 23, well, 21, 22, that are wanting to become police officers. We hired 10 of them, and they're civilian employees with our department, and they do civilian jobs. But there was a gap of losing people that were interested in law enforcement in that age of 18 to 21 because you can't apply until you're a certain age, and we were losing people because it's such a long process. So we're trying to get them on the police department as civilians, keep them in the atmosphere, in the environment of hanging out with law enforcement and doing some civilian jobs within the police department. So I'm doing both those programs. But, you know, I've just got to, you know, it's just trying to reach out and give them experiences to show them that there's something else than you know, your neighborhood.
Exactly. And, again, this is a social problem that goes back decades and decades, and nobody expects the Indianapolis Police Department to be able to solve it. No police department has been able to solve this problem totally. But you're doing the right thing by reaching out to these kids and saying, hey, there is an option here. You can have a job that is good and decent, and you're doing good work. And like you said, that is what gives them, hopefully, some hope in their life that they're able to do something good and not have to become a criminal. But I can imagine it might be difficult, especially if somebody comes from a neighborhood that is very crime-ridden, to become a police officer. You would probably get all kinds of, I can't imagine it would be a pleasant thing, but at the very least, maybe they could go in and show them, you don't, like you said, you don't have to be a criminal. That's the thing everybody needs to know. You don't have to be. And it's, some people feel they don't have a choice, and they may be right in certain situations, but mostly you can do something different with your life. I'm so thrilled that you are doing that, and it sounds incredible. Now, can we just turn back a moment? We'll get back to your work as well, but I'm going to turn back a moment to the homicides that we're talking about. There is, according to an article I read, there is a 30% chance a killer will be convicted and sent to prison on any charge after a murder. Is that good or is that bad?
I mean, it's horrible. It really is horrible. And it just shows where we are as a society, that we are, you know, we initially will, if we get an arrest, you know, for murder, you know, it gets dropped down. And again, it comes down to, you know, witness cooperation, people just, you know, showing up for court. Because as you know, I can make an arrest for murder, and by the time it goes to trial, it could be at least a year, if not 2 years. And in that mm-hmm. process, you lose witnesses, they've moved, that, you know, even trying to track them down, because, you know, a lot of these people, they live in different, they move, you can't get a hold of them, cell phone numbers change, all those things happen. And the last thing they want to do is get a call from a detective saying, oh, by the way, you got to come in for court. I mean, they just don't mm-hmm. show. They just don't show.
Right.
And it just it's a sad statistic, because, you know, when I was in the homicide unit, we had such a great you know, core of people, and I think that they still do, but somewhere along the line it's broken down, and I think, you know, it's the society that we live in right now, and the culture of just being totally non-cooperative with the police on anything. You know, it's not just mm-hmm. at homicides, it's anything. And I don't know what the answer, I wish I could figure out what the answer would be. And I think the best thing we can do is try to bridge those gaps with relationships and try to find that one person that could open it wide up.
Absolutely. And that one person, in my opinion, is you. You've certainly been working on it just by when you were a homicide detective. I'm sure you were the type of person that people felt they could trust, and you could bring them in and they could talk. But again, like you said, it's the society we live in, and YouTube, I'm telling you, has all kinds of anti-cop and horrible cop videos on there. And if that's all you watch and you're 16, 17, that's what you're going to think is going to happen to you if you ever run into a police officer. And that's just not a true look at the whole picture of being a police officer and law enforcement. It's a segment of it that needs to be addressed, but it's not the whole thing. But by your work and doing your cadet program and your explorers program, that to me is the stepping stone of getting those kids in there and getting them just basically schooled on what law enforcement is really about. So in closing, as far as the murders and as far as the media kind of just going, yeah, it's just a gang, what would you like to say, Christine? Let's hear your final thoughts on that. And then go ahead.
Yeah, I think that it's going to take everybody. It's going to take the media. It's going to take the police officers. It's going to take the community. It's going to take community leaders to all kind of get together and whatever role you have in the community, try to shed some light and get some attention. If you're in the media, go and interview these families that are going through these things and get it out there, because you interview one family, in a rough part of Indianapolis that's lost a loved one, and, so many people are going to be able to relate. And I think if we can shine the light that they're not, because the way I did my homicides, yes, this victim may have been arrested 50 times. Very rarely am I coming across a victim that wasn't involved in some type of criminal activity at some point. But you just have to kind of remember that, at one point, this is somebody's son. This is somebody's brother, sister. They weren't always like this, and they're loved by their family. And if we can start, the media can start getting out and getting more of the human side of what these people are about, that may help. Leaders of the community, get out there and talk to the people in these neighborhoods and tell them how important it is so that the violence can stop. Because, we're just killing one another. It doesn't matter what community or what color you are or whatever, we're killing one another, and it affects everybody. Because if you look, it was funny because we were talking about this on the podcast. If you kill somebody, the amount of people that are affected, you've got all the victim's family and the friends, and then, of course, the suspect and his family and his friends. And if you start counting the amount of people that are affected by this one incident, it's unbelievable. So I think it's just looking at yourself and saying, what little part can I give? And if everybody did that, then there would be a lot of giving, and we may be able to find an answer.
Absolutely. And everybody can give something. They can make an effective change. They can do one little thing that could have, like you said, a good ripple effect rather than the bad ripple effect of a crime or a murder. Let's talk about a little bit about the media here, because the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads, that's absolutely true. But one thing I'm surprised that, and maybe the media in Indianapolis, maybe the people involved have done this, but you can take a human interest story. There are common denominators in all of this that we're talking about right now. The common denominator is children having children. That's a big one. How many 14 and 15-year-olds get pregnant and have a baby, and then they're not able to raise it, and then they turn to drugs? It's just, you can write the script over and over and over. And I think if the media started with that, why is this crime rate going up? Why are these young kids going into gangs? You start at the beginning. Where's the problem? The problem, in my opinion, is children having children. I swear to you, if we could get that under control, I believe the rest would be very easy. Children having children, then it's, drugs, then it's crime. I'm sure you saw that a lot, or am I just up in the night?
No. It's absolutely an aspect of it. It's young people, and they don't have anything, and they're living, below the poverty level, and so crime is all around them, and so that just is, it's just going to breed crime. It's just going to breed, it's a horrible kind of cesspool. And I think you're right. If we can get a grip on, why young people are having babies, and it would be an interesting story to just say, what were you thinking? There's so much way,
exactly.
There's so many ways to have prevented that, as easy as, protection and all those things. It's like, are they not educated to know that, they can get on the pill, or that there's, protection for this so that you don't have to get pregnant? What in their mind are they thinking, or do they want to have babies? Maybe they
want to
have babies.
I think some of them want to.
Nobody loves them, and,
exactly.
Who knows? It would be interesting. It would be interesting to go into these neighborhoods and say, we all know why you, how you had a baby, but why, what were you thinking, you know, that led to this? And if we could get a grip on that, I think it would only help, for sure.
Exactly. And because these kids were, their parents are kids, so that's all they know. That's all they see. And I think you're right. I think a lot of young women say, I need someone to love me, and maybe this man will love me, and I know this baby will love me, without obviously thinking of any of the consequences. And I do think that would be a great human interest story that can lead up to joining the gang, follow the common denominators. I'm telling you, if it were up to me, and I'm sure somebody's going to want to kill me for saying this, I would be on every street corner handing out free birth control. I don't care if it's in the classiest neighborhood or the worst neighborhood. I would just be handing it out. Here you go, like candy. Use it, use it, use it. Get ready to have a baby when you're ready. Don't have a baby if you can't afford to feed it. That's just, you would think that's common sense, but it's not. They're doing it over and over. So, and it's scary. It really, I just wish I could be king of the world, Christine, because then I could just solve all these problems really quickly.
Right.
Hey, Christine, tell us about the Menina Files. What's coming up in your latest podcast?
Well, I tell you, we just came up on 50 episodes, and the new one that's coming up, ironically, is a homicide that I investigated on Halloween night, where it was a gunfight. 11 to 15 shots were fired back and forth, and so we'll be talking about that next week. And the podcast is going well. I mean, the Menina Files is getting a lot of attention, and we're trying to bring a lot of topics to the forefront. I mean, we've hit on, suicide and mental health issues that we're having that lead to crime, and trying to deal, the police, as police officers, we're getting a lot more training to be able to deal with, the mental health crisis that we have. Obviously, there's an opiate crisis. So, we're just trying to shed light on a lot of these topics as we're going through the podcast, and me and my partner at this point now are going to write a book. We're in the process of writing a book
fantastic.
That we're going to try to get done by PrimeCon next May.
Oh, that will be wonderful. I will really look forward to reading that. And we'll keep plugging the Menina Files on Web Sleuths. I think you do a great job, and you talk the talk and you walk the talk. You do it. You do what you're telling other people to do. And I don't see that very often. So I admire what you do a great deal. And I hope you'll come on our show again real soon.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on, and happy holidays to everyone.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you. That's Christine Menina of the Menina Files. You can go to themeninafiles.com for her incredible podcast. Take care, Christina, okay?
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Okay, well, it was an interesting show, to say the least. And, boy, you guys lucky that Christine called in when she did, because I was getting ready to tell you my life story and all my woes. And you would have wanted to stay in the house and never go out again. So you're lucky she called in. Okay. Next week, we're going to have a great show. I promise you. We're going to have guests that will be compelling. We're going to talk about the latest. And Sherry Papini, that case just intrigues me. She's the woman that went jogging and then said she was kidnapped for 3 weeks and then she showed up again. Is she telling the truth or not? Maybe we'll find out by next week. Be sure and come to websleuths.com to take a look at all the best true crime discussion on the internet. Okay, everybody, see you next week at our regular time, 8 p.m. Eastern on Sundays on Blog Talk Radio. It's Web Sleuths Radio. Goodbye.